When pain is traumatic, the trance can become full-blown and sustained. The victim pulls away from pain in the body with such fearful intensity that the conscious connection between body and mind is severed. This is called dissociation. All of us, to some degree, disconnect from our bodies. But when we live bound in fear of perceived ever-present danger, finding our way back can be a long and delicate process. Traumatic fear, dissociating from our body. As a child, Rosalie had been severely abused by her father. When he was drunk, he would try to reach into her underpants or climb into her bed at night and rub his body against hers until he climaxed. When she resisted him, he'd hit her and threaten her with worse. If she tried to run away and hide, he would become enraged, chase after her, and mercilessly beat her. On two occasions during the year before he and her mother divorced, Rosalie's father had forced her to have intercourse with him. Such severe trauma has an emotional and physical impact that can endure a lifetime. When Rosalie came to see me, she was 35 years old, single, and mildly anorexic. She'd already been through several forms of therapy, but was still going on and off starvation diets and suffering from regular anxiety attacks. Her body was thin, rigid, and tight, and she was mistrustful of everyone she knew. Rosalie assumed that anyone who appeared to like her really just wanted to take advantage of her. She told me she thought one person she hung around with was a friend only because she didn't want to go to parties alone. Another woman, who was attractive and popular with men, must like to be around her because it boosted her ego. While Rosalie had no trouble finding dates, intimacy never lasted for long. Not wanting to feel the humiliation of being dropped, she usually broke off the relationship at the first signs that things were going downhill. Even with people she'd known for a long time, Rosalie kept her distance. When she was going through one of her regular bouts of anxiety, she'd either act as if she had it all together or disappear for a while. Often the only way Rosalie could spend time with people was by getting stoned. Marijuana made everything seem okay for the time being. But, she told me, now she needed to get high every night before bed in order to sleep through the night. If she didn't smoke a joint or take sleeping pills, she'd wake up in the middle of the night in a fit of terror. The dream was always the same. She was hiding in a small dark place, and someone beastly and insane was about to find her. Neuropsychology tells us that traumatic abuse causes lasting changes by affecting our physiology, nervous system, and brain chemistry. In the normal process of forming memories, we evaluate each new situation in terms of a cohesive worldview we have formulated. With trauma, this cognitive process is short-circuited by the surge of painful and intense stimulation. Instead of processing the experience, by fitting it into our understanding of how the world works and thereby learning from it, we revert to a more primitive form of encoding, through physical sensations and visual images. The trauma, undigested and locked in our body, randomly breaks through into consciousness. For years after the actual danger is past, a person who has been traumatized may relive an event as if it were continually occurring in the present. Unprocessed pain keeps our system of self-preservation on permanent alert. In addition to sudden intrusive memories, a wide range of situations, many non-threatening, may activate the alarmingly high levels of pain and fear stored in our body. Our partner might raise her voice in irritation, and the full force of our past wounds, all the terror or rage or hurt that lives in our body, can be unleashed. Whether or not there is any present danger, we feel absolutely at risk and compelled to find a way to get away from this pain. In order to make it through this severe pain, victims of trauma dissociate from their bodies, numbing their sensitivity to physical sensations. Some people feel unreal, as if they have left their body and are experiencing life from a great distance. They do whatever they can to keep from feeling the raw sensations of fear and pain in their body. They might lash out in aggression, or freeze in depression or confusion. They might have suicidal thoughts, or drink themselves senseless. They overeat, use drugs, and lose themselves in mental obsessions. Yet the pain and fear don't go away. Rather, they lurk in the background, and from time to time, suddenly take over. Dissociation, while protective, creates suffering. When we leave our bodies, we leave home. By rejecting pain and pulling away from the ground of our being, we experience the disease of separation, loneliness, anxiety, and shame. Alice Miller tells us that there is no way to avoid what's in the body. We either pay attention to it, or we suffer the consequences. The truth about our childhood is stored up in our body, and although we can repress it, we can never alter it. Our intellect can be deceived, our feelings manipulated, and conceptions confused, and our body tricked with medication. But someday, our body will present its bill, for it is as incorruptible as a child, who, still whole in spirit, will accept no compromises or excuses, and it will not stop tormenting us until we stop evading the truth. When Rosalie and I started working together, it was clear that her time had come. Her body was presenting its bill. During our first few sessions, she poured out her life story. While she was very bright and could easily articulate her problems and their causes, it was as if she were talking about someone else's life. She let me know that when we were talking, she wasn't aware of feelings in her body. Yet outside of therapy, she was sometimes besieged by panic or rage. At those times, these feelings in her body were so intense she wanted to die. I suggested we might work together to help her gradually feel safer in her body, and let her know that this could make a difference in a way that her previous therapies hadn't. She readily agreed, and over the next few weeks, we laid the groundwork. I wanted to understand Rosalie as deeply as possible, and she needed to feel safe and comfortable with me. When she was ready, I suggested we do a guided journey, exploring parts of her inner life that might lie outside her conscious awareness. On the day of the journey, I invited Rosalie to sit comfortably and close her eyes. I guided her with the hypnotic imagery of slowly descending a long, winding staircase that ended facing a closed door. I suggested that with each step, she leave behind distracting thoughts and become increasingly relaxed and curious. By the time she had reached the bottom of the stairs, Rosalie's body was very still, her eyelids flickering, her face slightly flushed. She nodded when I asked if she saw a door, and I suggested that behind it, she would discover something important to her healing, some gift from her unconscious mind. I reminded her that no matter what she experienced, she was safe. We were here together, and she could come back whenever she wished. Then I told her she could open the door whenever she was ready. Rosalie stiffened. "What do you see?" I asked softly. Her voice was barely a whisper. "A little girl. She's in a closet, hiding." When I asked what she was hiding from, Rosalie shook her head slightly. After a few moments, I asked her how old she was. "She's 7, she responded, and went on quickly. "It's her dad. He's going to find her and hurt her." I reassured her that the little girl was safe right now, and suggested that by relaxing and just noticing what happened next, she would discover some way this little girl might be helped. When I saw her breathing more easily, I asked what the little girl was doing now. "She's praying," She's saying it hurts too much, that she can't take it anymore. I waited for a few moments, then asked her gently, Rosalie, what might help that little girl handle all that pain? She frowned. She's all by herself. There's no one there. Then her words came slowly. She needs someone to take care of her. Who could best do that? I asked. Again she paused, intent and focused. Suddenly her face filled with a look of surprise and amusement. A good fairy. I can see her there with the little girl. She's with her in the closet. Rosalie waited for a moment, and then reported, The fairy's surrounded by a shimmering blue light, and she's waving a golden wand. Rosalie, does the fairy have a message for the little girl? Something she wants to say? She nodded. She's telling her she can do something to help. She can do something that will let her forget for a while about the horrible things going on, so she can grow up and handle it when she's stronger. I paused for a bit, and then, speaking softly, asked how the fairy was going to do that. Rosalie's tone was calm and deliberate. She says she is going to touch different parts of her body with her magic wand, and they will change and be able to hold all the terrible feelings for her. She paused, listening inwardly, and then continued. The good fairy is saying that even though it's hard to be so bound up, it will be her way to survive, to be quiet and control what's happening inside her. After a long silence, I asked Rosalie what had happened. Well, the fairy put the little girl's rage and fear into her belly, and then she bound it up so it could stay there. And then she put a magic lock on her pelvis and vagina so her sexual feelings couldn't get her in any more trouble. Rosalie took a few shaky breaths, and I gently asked, What else? Tears began rolling down her cheeks as she said. She told her she'd have to let her ribcage tighten so she wouldn't feel the pain of her heart breaking. Rosalie was quiet, and then she went on, her voice a little stronger. She said her neck would be a fortress, with very thick round walls, so that she wouldn't cry out for help or scream out in anger. Rosalie fell quiet, and I just sat with her in silence. You're doing beautifully, I told her, and then added gently, Is there anything else the fairy wants you to know? Rosalie nodded. She says someday the little girl will no longer be able to hold this all in, and her body will start unwinding its secrets. She will let go of everything she has been holding for so long. And she will do this because, most deeply, she wants to be whole and real. Rosalie was softly weeping, her shoulders shaking. She just told the little girl not to worry. She would find people who cared and would hold her as she finds herself again. Rosalie sank back in her chair, and I asked her what was happening now. The good fairy is putting her arms around the little girl and taking her to bed. After a few moments, she continued, whispering. She's telling her that when she wakes up, she will forget what happened, but she will remember when she's ready. Rosalie was quiet, and when she continued, her voice was tender. The good fairy just told her, Until then, and for always, I love you. As if she had just finished the last page of a cherished book, Rosalie reached for the shawl I leave on my couch, wrapped it around herself, and lay down, curling herself into the cushions. Is this okay? She whispered. I just want to rest for a few minutes. Her face looked serene, as if these were the first real moments of ease she had touched in a long, long time. In those weeks that followed her inner journey, Rosalie slowly emerged as if from a cocoon. Even her physical movements were lighter, more fluid. I asked if she would mind if I shared her fairy story in one of my meditation classes. That made her happy. She gladly wished for others the new inner freedom she felt. When I told the story, a number of people cried as they realized how they too had pulled away from their bodies, how they had locked up their energy and were not fully alive. It opened up the possibility of forgiving themselves for not facing their own deep wounds, and it helped them understand that it was natural to seek relief in the face of unbearable pain. There are times in our life we might have had no choice but to contract away from unbearable physical or emotional pain. Our healing comes from reconnecting with those places in our body where that pain is stored. For Rosalie, as for all of us, moving toward freedom requires meeting with radical acceptance the pain that was locked away in fear. No matter how deeply we have been wounded, when we listen to the inner voice that calls us back to our bodies, back to wholeness, we begin our journey. Healing our wounds, returning home to our body. Rosalie's journey had given her a way to understand what had happened to her and how she could free herself. Many of our subsequent sessions were dedicated to exploring techniques that could help her become more at home in her body. I first introduced her to a sweeping meditation, guiding her attention slowly up and down her body, focusing on each region, feet and legs, torso, shoulders, arms and hands, neck, head. I encouraged Rosalie to imagine breathing energy and light into the part of the body she was attending to, and totally letting go and relaxing as she breathed outward. As she deepened her attention in each area, I suggested that she simply notice whatever sensations she felt there, accepting them exactly as they were. When Rosalie told me she was having a hard time feeling sensations inside her stomach and pelvic area, I asked her what color felt healing to her. She immediately remembered the shimmering blue that had surrounded the fairy. I suggested that she imagine feeling those areas of her body bathed in that blue, letting the color wash through her with each breath. After some moments, Rosalie nervously reported, "I do feel some movement, some tingling," and then, "That's enough for now." While she wasn't able to sustain her attention in that newly awakening area for very long, Rosalie was proud of her first efforts. It had taken courage to re-enter the places that had felt so dangerous. Rosalie arrived at our next session excited about a new man she had met. But by the following week, excitement had turned to anxiety, and her body looked rigid with fear. She really liked this guy and didn't want to pull away. "If I can't make peace with this fear, Tara, I won't hang in there." Rosalie knew she needed to meet her body's experience with radical acceptance. I suggested she pause and, feeling into her new body, sense what was most asking for her attention and acceptance. This was new for Rosalie. Up until now, she had only explored a mindful presence in her body when she was relatively relaxed. That was safe. But to feel raw fear had many painful associations. Closing her eyes, she became silent and still. After about a minute, she put her hand on her stomach. "In here," she said. "I'm really scared. I feel like I could throw up." I encouraged her to let the warmth of her hand, her own gentle touch, help her bring her full awareness to the unpleasant feelings. I asked her if she could feel that area from the inside and just notice what was happening. Rosalie took several full breaths and sank back into the couch. For the next few minutes, she named what she was experiencing. the soreness and squeezing tightness in the center of her belly, the feelings of her chest rising and falling with several deep breaths, loosening and dissolving of the hard knot in her stomach, a quaking and jumpiness spreading throughout her stomach. The thought, maybe he's the right one, stabbing fear, shaking. The image of a young child alone in the closet. The thought, I can't stand this. Heat spreading up into her chest and throat. A strangling feeling in her throat. Breathing in blue, opening and softening in her throat. An upwelling of sadness. When she finally looked up, her eyes were glistening. All this is happening inside me, and I'm just holding that little girl in my arms. After a few moments, she went on. I feel like I can accept this pain. I can handle whatever I'm feeling. In both Buddhist psychology and Western experiential therapy, this process of experiencing and accepting the changing stream of sensations is central to the alchemy of transformation. Emotions, a combination of physical sensations and the stories we tell ourselves, continue to cause suffering until we experience them where they live in our body. If we bring a steady attention to the immediate physical experience of an emotion, past sensations and stories linked to it that have been locked in our body and mind are de-repressed. Layers of historic hurt, fear, or anger may begin to play themselves out in the light of awareness. Like Rosalie, when we feel and release the past pain held in our body, we become increasingly free to meet our present feelings with a wakeful and kind heart. We discover, as Rumi writes, the cure for the pain is in the pain. In order to go through her pain in a way that would lead to the cure, Rosalie needed to feel a degree of safety. A basic sense of trust had been emerging for her since her journey. Our relationship was a haven for her. She trusted that I really cared about her and relied on my support as she re-entered her body. Her experience with the fairy had revealed her own inner wisdom, her urge to protect herself, and her longing to be awake and whole. What was now giving this trust its deepest roots was actually taking the risk to open mindfully to sensations. Each time she could sense her body from the inside and accept the sensations that were arising, even the most frightening ones, she felt more confidence about her capacity to be at home there. She could handle whatever came up. She could find the cure through being with the pain. Learning to bring radical acceptance to our physical experience is usually a gradual process. If we have a large reservoir of fear locked in our body, we begin, as Rosalie did, by just putting our toe in the river, feeling the sensations, and then stepping back when necessary. While at times we may encounter no pain at all, at other times the pain may be intense. Being at home in our body does not require us to focus for sustained periods of time on overwhelming physical or emotional pain. Especially if we feel worn down, it is wise and compassionate to take breaks, to rest, to direct our attention elsewhere. If we are meditating, we might direct loving kindness to the pain or fear, or rest our attention in the breath and relax our body as fully as possible. If overwhelming sensations arise during our day, we might listen to music, talk with a friend, or read a novel. When we encounter an especially rough patch, we may need the support of a meditation teacher, healer, or therapist to help us hold our experience with presence and care. With time, as the good fairy promised, coming home to our body can be our rite of passage. As we bring a gentle attention to the ground of sensations, we free ourselves from the reactive stories and emotions that have kept us bound in fear. By inhabiting our body with awareness, we reclaim our life and our spirit. Letting life live through us. A couple of years into my long chronic illness, I attended a 6-week Vipassana meditation retreat. I had been to a number of extended retreats before and loved the long days filled with silence. This retreat was during a glorious New England fall, and I was delighted to have the chance to meditate in such beauty. Given my struggles with sickness, I looked forward to this time entirely dedicated to sitting and walking meditation. I needed the inspiration I knew I would find in the talks and instructions the teachers would be giving. The retreat would be a precious opportunity to become more accepting and present with my body and mind. The first few days went smoothly. My mind began to quiet, and I readily settled into the rhythm of the retreat. Toward the end of the week, I started having stomach aches and felt so exhausted I could barely motivate myself to walk to the meditation hall. I was used to these symptoms. After much testing, the medical world had labeled them with the catch-all phrase of chronic fatigue and told me I had irritable bowel syndrome. At this point, it was a matter of making peace with discomfort. Okay, I figured a bit grudgingly. I'm here to work with unpleasant sensations. For the next 24 hours, I noted the heat and cramping in my stomach, the leaden feeling in my limbs, and tried with some success to experience them with an accepting attention. But in the days that followed, when the symptoms didn't go away, I found myself caught in the habitual stories and sinking into a funk of fear, shame, and depression. Something's wrong with me, with the way I'm living my life. I'll never get better. And under that, the deep fear, I'll never be happy. The familiar trance threatened to take over, and I took that as a signal to deepen my attention. On a clear and brisk afternoon at the beginning of the second week of retreat, I took off into the woods and walked until I found a patch of sun. Wrapping myself in the warm blanket I had brought from my room, I sat down and propped myself against a tree. The ground, covered with leaves, offered a firm, gentle cushion. It felt good to sit here in the natural world. I felt at home in the simplicity of earth, trees, wind, sky. I was resolved to attend to my own nature, to the changing stream of sensations living through my body. After taking some moments to release whatever obvious tension I could, I did a quick scan through my body. I noticed the aches and soreness, the sinking feeling of tiredness. In an instant, I was out of my body and into my mind. Whoa, I still really feel sick. Once again, I watched my mind contracting with the idea that something really was wrong. Fear. It felt like thick, hard braids of rope, tightening around my throat and chest. Taking a deep breath, I let go of thoughts about sickness and just felt the gripping fear. I decided that no matter what experience arose, I was going to meet it with the attitude of, this too. I was going to accept everything. As the minutes passed, I found I was feeling sensations without wishing them away. I was simply feeling the weight pressing on my throat and chest, feeling the tight ache in my stomach. The discomfort didn't disappear, but something gradually began shifting. My mind no longer felt tight or dull, but clearer, focused, and absolutely open. As my attention deepened, I began to perceive the sensations throughout my body as moving energy, tingling, pulsing vibration. Pleasant or not, it was all the same energy playing through me. As I noticed feelings and thoughts appear and disappear, it became increasingly clear that they were just coming and going on their own. Sensations were appearing out of nowhere and vanishing back into the void. There was no sense of a self owning them. There was no me feeling the vibrating, the pulsing, the tingling. No me being oppressed by unpleasant sensations. No me generating thoughts or trying to meditate. Life was just happening, a magical display of appearances. As every passing experience was accepted with the openness of this too, any sense of boundary or solidity in my body and mind dissolved. Like the weather, sensations and emotions and thoughts were just moving through the open, empty sky of awareness. When I opened my eyes, I was stunned by the beauty of the New England fall, the trees rising tall out of the earth, yellows and reds set against a bright blue sky. The colors felt like a vibrant, sensational part of life playing through my body. The sound of the wind appeared and vanished. Leaves fluttered toward the ground. A bird took flight from a nearby branch. The whole world was moving. Like the life within me, nothing was fixed, solid, confined. I knew without a doubt that I was part of the world. When I next felt a cramping in my stomach, I could recognize it as simply another part of the natural world. As I continued paying attention, I could feel the arising and passing aches and pressures inside me as no different from the firmness of earth, the falling leaves. There was just pain, and it was the earth's pain. When we are free of mental concepts and our senses are awake, the sounds, smells, images, and vibrations we experience connect us with all life everywhere. It is not my pain. It is the earth's pain. It is not my aliveness, but simply life. Unfolding and intense, mysterious and beautiful. By meeting the changing dance of sensations with radical acceptance, we discover our intrinsic belonging to this world. We are no thing, not limited to any passing experience, and everything, belonging to the whole. In Roger Keyes' poem, Hokusai says, "The teachings of a wise Japanese artist remind us of our belonging to life, and of our capacity to open to its fullness." Hokusai says, "Look carefully." He says, "Pay attention. Notice." He says, "Keep looking. Stay curious." He says, "There is no end to seeing." He says, "Everything is alive. Shells, buildings, people, fish, mountains, trees. Wood is alive. Water is alive. Everything has its own life. Everything lives inside us." He says, "Live with the world inside you. It matters that you care. It matters that you feel. It matters that you notice. It matters that life lives through you. Look, feel, let life take you by the hand. Let life live through you." As we move from resisting our physical experience to bringing radical acceptance to the life living through us, we awaken from trance. We open to the fullness and mystery of our life. Each moment we wakefully let be, we are home. As the great 18th century Zen master Hakuin Zenji wrote, "This very place is the Lotus Land, this very body, the Buddha." The Lotus Land is the cherished place of awakening that is always here in the present moment. When we meet life through our bodies with radical acceptance, we are the Buddha, the awakened one, beholding the changing stream of sensations, feelings, and thoughts. Everything is alive. The whole world lives inside us. As we let life live through us, we experience the boundless openness of our true nature. Guided meditation, developing an embodied presence. A mindful body scan is a valuable pathway to embodied presence. Sitting comfortably, close your eyes and take several long, deep breaths. Then rest in the natural flow of your breath and allow your body and mind to begin to settle. With a relaxed, open awareness, now begin a gradual and thorough scan of your entire body. Place your attention at the top of your head, and without looking for anything in particular, feel the sensations there. Then, letting your attention move down, feel the sensations on the back of your head, on either side of your head, through your ears. Notice the sensations through your forehead, eyes, nose, cheeks, jaw, and mouth. Be as slow and thorough as you like. As you continue the scan, be careful not to use your eyes to direct your attention. This will only create tension. Rather, connect directly with the sensations by feeling the body from within the body. In certain parts of the body, it is common to feel numbness or for there to be no noticeable sensations. Let your attention remain in those areas for a few moments in a relaxed and easeful way. You may find that as your attention deepens, when you revisit these places, you become increasingly aware of sensations. Images or thoughts will naturally arise. Notice them passing through, and gently return your attention to the sensations. Let your intention be to release all ideas and experience your physical aliveness exactly as it is. Place your attention on the area of your neck and throat, noticing without any judgment whatever sensations you feel. Be aware of each of your shoulders from the inside. Then let your attention move slowly down your arms, feeling the sensations and aliveness there. Bring awareness to your hands, making sure they are resting in an easy and effortless way. Feel each finger from the inside, the palms, the backs of the hands, noticing tingling, pulsing, pressure, warmth, or cold. Arrive in the life of your body. Now place your awareness on your chest, exploring the sensations in that whole area. Slowly allow your awareness to sink down into your stomach. With a soft, receptive awareness, take some moments to feel the sensations in your abdomen. Place your attention on your upper back, feeling the sensations in the area around your shoulder blades. Moving down, be aware of the mid and lower back, and then the entire spinal column. Continuing to let awareness seep down the body, feel the sensations that arise through the hips, buttocks, genitals. What are the actual sensations that are arising? Move slowly down through the legs, feeling them from within. Explore the sensations in your feet and toes. At the places where your body touches the chair, cushion, or floor, feel the sensations of contact, pressure, and temperature. Now open your attention to include your body in a comprehensive way. Be aware of the body as a field of changing sensations. Can you sense the subtle energy field that vitalizes and gives life to every cell, every organ in your body? Is there anything in your experience that is solid, unmoving? Is there any center or boundary to the field of sensation? Is there any solid self you can locate that possesses these sensations? What or who is aware of experience? As you rest in awareness of your whole body, if particular sensations call your attention, bring a soft and allowing attention to them. Don't manage or manipulate your experience. Don't grasp or push anything away. Simply open to the changing dance of sensations, feeling your life from the inside out. If no particular sensations call your attention, remain open to feeling energy simultaneously in all parts of the body. If thoughts carry your attention away, gently note, thinking, thinking, and then reconnect with the energetic field of aliveness. Rest in this awareness of your living being, letting life live through you. A body scan from head to toe or feet to head can be repeated over and over during a single meditation sitting. You might do a full scan, rest in attention of the whole body for a few minutes, and then scan again. You might do an initial scan slowly and then subsequent scans more quickly. You might choose to scan once and then continue to practice by attending to predominant sensations and, whenever possible, the whole field of bodily sensations. Experiment and find out what most helps you in sustaining a relaxed and wakeful presence in your body. In daily life, return to the experience of your body as often as possible. You can readily arrive in your body by relaxing and softening through your shoulders, hands, and belly. As you move through the various circumstances of your day, notice what sensations arise in your body. What happens when you feel angry? When you are stressed and racing against time? When you feel criticized or insulted by someone? When you feel excited or happy? Pay particular attention to the difference between being inside thoughts and awakening again to the immediate experience of sensations. Guided meditation, radical acceptance of pain. We cultivate radical acceptance of pain by relaxing our resistance to unpleasant sensations and meeting them with non-reactive awareness. This exercise is especially useful if you are presently distressed by physical pain. Find a comfortable position, sitting or lying down. Take a few moments to become still, relaxing with the natural rhythm of the breath. Gently scan through your body, relaxing your brow and jaw, dropping your shoulders and softening through your hands. Try not to create any unnecessary tension in your body. Where is the area of strong discomfort or pain that calls your attention? Bring a receptive attention directly to the unpleasant sensations in that part of your body. Notice what happens as you begin to be present with this pain. Is there an attempt, however subtle, to push the pain away? To cut it off, block it off, pull away? Is there fear? You might notice how the body and mind clench like a fist in an attempt to resist pain. Let your intention be to remain present, allowing the unpleasant sensations to be as they are. Soften any reaction against the pain, allowing the fist of resistance to unclench and open. The more you can connect with open and spacious awareness, the more you will be able to be present with sensations and allow them to unfold naturally. Experience your awareness as the soft space that surrounds the pain and allow the unpleasant sensations to float in this awareness. Resting in this openness, now bring a more precise attention to the changing sensations in the area of pain. What is the experience actually like? Do you feel burning? Aching, twisting, throbbing, tearing, stabbing? Does the pain feel like a knot, a constricting band? Does the area feel as if it is being pressed down or crushed by a great weight? Are the unpleasant sensations diffuse or focused in their intensity? How do they change as you observe them? Investigate with a non-reactive, soft attention. Allow the sensations you may feel as a solid block of pain to unfold and move in their natural dance of change. When resistance arises, relax again, re-establishing a sense of openness. Be aware of your entire body, including the areas that aren't painful. Let the body become like open space, with plenty of room for unpleasant sensations to arise and dissolve, fade and intensify, move and change. No holding, no tension. Inhabit the sea of awareness and let any painful sensations float in an accepting openness. Try not to judge yourself for reacting when pain feels like just too much. Take care of yourself in whatever way provides ease and comfort. Over time, if you practice mindful presence of pain for even a few moments at a time, equanimity will increase. You will be able to more readily let go of resistance and open to unpleasant sensations. 6. Radical acceptance of desire, awakening to the source of longing. Men are not free when they are doing just what they like. Men are only free when they are doing what the deepest self likes. and there is getting down to the deepest self. It takes some diving. D.H. Lawrence. From the urgent way lovers want each other to the seeker's search for truth, all moving is from the mover. Every pull draws us to the ocean. Rumi. When I was first introduced to Buddhism in a high school world studies class, I dismissed it out of hand. It seemed irrelevant to my life, grim in its concern about attachment, and apparently anti-pleasure. Sure, maybe we all suffer, but why dwell on it? It was the late 60s, and for many of us then, hedonism was a devotional practice. We were desire junkies. Buddhism seemed to be telling me to stop seeking after romantic relationships, forego having good times with friends, avoid the highs of marijuana, and give up my adventures in nature. In my mind, freedom from desire would take all the fun out of life. Years later, I would realize that the Buddha never intended to make desire itself the problem. When he said craving causes suffering, he was referring not to our natural inclination as living beings to have wants and needs, but to our habit of clinging to experience that must, by nature, pass away. On my way to understanding that, I've stumbled around, fallen down, and repeatedly found myself deluded and entangled. Desire has sometimes taken me over like a tyrant, and at other times I have battled grimly, hardening myself against its strength. Eventually, I would find that relating wisely to the powerful and pervasive energy of desire is a pathway into unconditional loving. I first got a glimpse of this possibility, as may be expected, in that hotbed of desire, romantic relationships. A few years after leaving our spiritual community, my husband and I had divorced. Our marriage had been founded in a lifestyle that emphasized yogic disciplines, but did not encourage much focus on personal relationships. We were good friends, but not a good match as intimate partners. Not long after our divorce was final, I met a man who seemed to be exactly what I was looking for. In our few casual encounters, something had clicked, and I was infatuated. In the midst of that initial rush, I left for a week-long midwinter meditation retreat. In the 6 years that I had been practicing Buddhist meditation, I had attended a number of such retreats and loved the states of clarity and presence I touched there. But this time, instead of settling into even a semblance of mindful presence, my immediate and compelling draw was to the pleasures of fantasy. I was in the throes of a full-blown Vipassana romance, as such fantasies have come to be known. In the silence and austerity of retreat, the mind can build a whole erotic world around a person we barely know. Often the object of a VR is another meditator who has attracted our attention. In the time span of a few days, we can mentally live through a whole relationship, courting, marrying, having a family together. I had brought my fantasy person with me from home, and this industrial-strength Vipassana romance withstood all my best strategies for letting go and returning to the here and now. I tried to relax and direct my attention to the breath, to note what was happening in my body and mind. I could barely complete 2 cycles of mindful breathing before my mind would once again return to its favorite subject. I'd get lost in images of how we might acknowledge the huge attraction between us and head off to the Blue Ridge Mountains for a weekend together. I saw us meditating and then making passionate love. I imagined that we'd hike to the top of Old Rag Mountain, revel in the hints of early spring, and in the possibility that we were indeed soulmates. Then, with a stab of guilt, I'd remember where I was. Sometimes I'd look around and take in the serenity and dignity of the meditation hall. I'd remind myself of the freedom and joy of remaining present, and of the suffering that arises from living in stories and illusions. This didn't make a dent. The fantasies would take off again almost immediately. Hoping to get out of my head, I tried doing longer walking meditations on the snowy paths surrounding the retreat center. As my mind churned relentlessly onward, I felt self-indulgent and ashamed of my lack of discipline. Most of all, I was frustrated because I felt I was wasting precious time. This retreat was an opportunity to deepen my spiritual practice, and there I was, caught up in wanting and off in the future. The pain of intense wanting was more obvious on retreat, but I was all too familiar with the effect of such desire in my daily life. I knew what it was like to be at the beginning of a new relationship and pass days waiting and hoping to get a phone call. I knew what it was like to want to impress someone, a student, friend, teacher, with my intelligence or spirituality, and then leave our time together feeling embarrassed and inauthentic. I knew what it was like to keep postponing playtime with my son because I was so intent on finishing the literature review for my dissertation. How many hours of my life had I spent leaning into the future, striving to get my psychology license, longing to find the right partner, struggling to finish a book proposal? Not that I couldn't have these aspirations, but aiming my sights on the future was an uncomfortable, out-of-balance way of being. When such periods were in full swing, I was too tense to appreciate the beauty around me, too preoccupied to listen inwardly or enjoy the people I love. Now, at retreat, where I had every opportunity to be aware of the actual sounds, feelings, and sensations arising in the present moment, my obsessive wanting self was still getting in the way. After several days, I had a pivotal interview with my teacher. When I described how I'd become so overwhelmed, she asked, "How are you relating to the presence of desire?" I was startled into understanding. For me, desire had become the enemy, and I was losing the battle. Her question pointed me back to the essence of mindfulness practice. It doesn't matter what is happening. What matters is how we are relating to our experience. She advised me to stop fighting my experience and instead investigate the nature of wanting mind. I could accept whatever was going on, she reminded me, but without getting lost in it. While often uncomfortable, desire is not bad. It is natural. The pull of desire is part of our survival equipment. It keeps us eating, having sex, going to work, doing what we do to thrive. Desire also motivates us to read books, listen to talks, and explore spiritual practices that help us realize and inhabit loving awareness. The same life energy that leads to suffering also provides the fuel for profound awakening. Desire becomes a problem only when it takes over our sense of who we are. In teaching the middle way, the Buddha guided us to relate to desire without getting possessed by it and without resisting it. He was talking about every level of desire, for food and sex, for love and freedom. He was talking about all degrees of wanting, from small preferences to the most compelling cravings. We are mindful of desire when we experience it with an embodied awareness, recognizing the sensations and thoughts of wanting as arising and passing phenomena. While this is not easy, as we cultivate the clear seeing and compassion of radical acceptance, we discover we can open fully to this natural force and remain free in its midst. What is desire? The Dalai Lama begins many of his talks by saying that everyone wants to be happy. Nobody wants to suffer. Our desire for happiness is most fundamentally the desire to exist. This urge expresses itself in the way all things take form throughout the natural world. The same universal force of attraction that gathers atoms into molecules and holds solar systems spinning in galaxies also joins sperm with eggs and brings people together in communities. Buddhist monk and scholar Walpola Rahula talks about this primal desire as a tremendous force that moves whole lives, that even moves the whole world. This is the greatest force, the greatest energy in the world. As human beings, our desire for happiness focuses on fulfilling our needs. According to psychologist Abraham Maslow, our needs range in a hierarchy from basic biological drives to spiritual yearnings. We need security, food, and sex, emotional recognition and bonding, mental engagement and creative activity, communion and self-realization. Meeting these needs of body, mind, and spirit gives us satisfaction and pleasure. Denying them leaves us feeling deprived, frustrated, and incomplete. We seek out experiences that enable us to survive, thrive, and be fulfilled. The catch is that no matter how gratifying any experience may be, it is bound to change. The Buddha expressed this in the First Noble Truth. Existence is inherently dissatisfying. When I first heard this teaching in high school in its most common translation as life is suffering, I of course thought it meant life is nothing more than misery and anguish. But the Buddha's understanding of suffering was subtler and more profound. We are uncomfortable because everything in our life keeps changing. Our inner moods, our bodies, our work, the people we love, the world we live in. We can't hold on to anything. A beautiful sunset, a sweet taste, an intimate moment with a lover. Our very existence as the body-mind we call self. Because all things come and go. Lacking any permanent satisfaction, we continuously need another injection of fuel, stimulation, reassurance from loved ones, medicine, exercise, meditation. We are continually driven to become something more, to experience something else. If our desires are simple and can be temporarily satisfied, our way of responding is straightforward. When thirsty, we drink. When tired, we sleep. When lonely, we talk to a friend. Yet as we know, it's rarely this uncomplicated. Most of the time, our wanting is not so easily satisfied. Caught in the trance of unworthiness, our desires fixate on soothing, once and for all, our anxiety about imperfection. We strive to tie up all the loose ends and to avoid making mistakes, even though we know both are impossible. We want to feel good enough all the time in our work, parenting, relationships, health, appearance, and life. We want others to be a certain way, always happy, healthy, loving, and respectful toward us. Yet because these things don't happen, we are driven by the feeling that something is missing or wrong. Our gnawing everyday wants prevent us from relaxing and becoming aware of our deeper yearnings. We perpetually lean into the next moment, hoping it will offer the satisfaction that the present moment does not. The Latin root of the word desire, decidus, means away from a star. The way I like to interpret this is that stars are the energetic source of all life and an expression of pure awareness. This aliveness and wakefulness is what we long for most deeply. We long to belong to our star, to realize our own true nature. Yet because our desires habitually narrow and fixate on what nature passes away, we feel away from our star, away from the life, awareness, and love that is the essence of who we are. Feeling apart from the source of our being, we identify ourselves with our wants and with the ways that we try to satisfy them. The emergence of a wanting self. One of my psychotherapy clients, Chris, grew up in a household where no one ever praised him or even said, "Good job." His parents didn't seem to enjoy his brightness and humor. They barely noticed his natural musical talents. He could play almost any instrument he picked up. Chris remembers a particularly painful incident that happened when he was 5 years old. His parents had been talking with each other for a long time in the living room. Feeling left out and hoping to get some attention, Chris pulled out his new accordion from his toy box and started to perform for them.